Welcome to the Good Hard Story Podcast, where we believe that the good story and the hard story can be the exact same story. I'm Catherine Wolf, and I'm a stroke survivor, a speaker, an author, and co-founder of Hope Heals. Tune in here every week for conversations about wholeheartedly living in a good hard story. Join me in this joyful rebellion to the darkness where we discover the treasures hidden in our hurting. Friends, even 15 years after surviving a stroke that left me with lifelong disabilities, so much of my pain is still a mystery to me. I've spent many days of my life in darkness. In some ways, I'm still in the dark today, honestly. I don't have all the answers to why hard things happen, but I have learned to find treasure in that darkness. I want the same for you, friend. If you're looking for a companion to walk alongside you on your darkest days, I've written a new book just for you. It's called Treasures in the Dark, and it's available for pre-order today at treasuresinthedark.com. I'm so excited about this book, friends, because it speaks so honestly about processing our pain. It's divided into 90 short, easy-to-read devotionals that take specific moments from my life and apply them to your story. The book arcs from hurting to healing and finally to hoping. Honestly, this is the book I wish I would have had, with super consumable little entries for my journey. Today, I'm pulling a story and a little bit of treasure straight from the book. If today's podcast resonates with something in your soul, I want you to get your hands on the full version of Treasures in the Dark. So, if you pre-order today, you will get the following: a downloadable guide for how to pray in the dark, which is packed with over 20 pages of bonus resources. Number two, a series of personalized email messages that speak to your specific pain. Number three, immediate access to the book's introduction. And number four, an invitation to a special virtual conversation with me. So grab your copy today, friends, at treasuresinthedark.com. Now, let's get to treasure hunting together. Honestly, this is the book with those short, easily consumable entries that I wish I would have had as I've walked through various seasons of deep trial. So let's go. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Good Hard Story Podcast. I am so glad you're here today. Today, we are having another special episode based on Treasures in the Dark, the new book by yours truly and my sister-in-law, Alex Wolf. It's coming at you on April 9th. Please pre-order at treasuresinthedark.com. Now, for today, I'm going to be sharing based on reflection number 59, which is called Practice Resurrections. So I want to tell you about a line of poetry today that ends with one of the most powerful combinations of words I've ever read. You'll probably be confused to hear that it's from a poem called Manifesto, The Mad Farmer's Liberation Front. Okay, please don't turn off the episode now. I promise this is going to end up going somewhere good. So seriously. Okay, this poem is written by the spicy agrarian activist Wendell Berry, who you may have heard of. And this octogenarian and I don't have a lot in common. Not really. However, we both have a bone-deep belief in God's invitation to new life. I will not read the full poem to you here, but the last two words are what we need to focus on today. Practice resurrection. I've been a follower of Jesus as far back as I can remember. I can tell you the story of Jesus dying and rising again, forwards and backwards. I truly know it. I know it. I know it. To me, resurrection had only ever been meant to mean that miraculous, one-time-only, past-tense phenomenon that proved Jesus was who he said he was. Resurrection was an experience specific to Jesus and only to Jesus. But so much of me, in air quotes, died after my stroke, honestly. I realized that I needed a resurrection to apply to me too, somehow. In the slow motion and far less spectacular resurrection of my own, I experience victory over death for now. It looked less like a rolled away stone and more like being rolled away in a wheelchair. That's a quote. And kind of cute, huh? But I survived and I'm surviving here and now. Resurrection became personal and it became present tense in my story. Jesus's resurrection wasn't a one-time event. It was a first-time event that sparked a chain reaction of resurrection through the rest of time. He set the staggered but certain rhythm of disappointed, then delight, hard, then good, wounding, then healing, death, then new life. Resurrection sounds great, sure, but it also means experiencing the dying part first and then taking the risk of finding ourselves in a new life that we might not have chosen or expected. So how do we take a risk that big? I want to share with you how I started practicing resurrection myself and how it's possible for you too. Obviously, this is going to require some alliteration, so buckle up. First, you must find the possibilities. My stroke didn't kill me, but it did kill parts of me. My expectations, my dreams, my security, my stability, maybe even my trust in God for a little while. I began reframing those dead parts of my life as invitations to practice resurrection. This is a quote, to make space for surprising second chances and new life, to open up the possibilities beyond my old life. Borrowing the resurrection narrative as a part of my story has changed the way I see my life. Even today, when an expectation goes unmet or I'm dealing with some kind of loss, big or small, I consciously ask God to give me a resurrection mindset, to lend me the hopeful imagination to see new possibilities springing up from the void of what's gone. So, listener, take a moment here with me to think about some type of death that you're facing today. I'm putting death in air quotes, because more likely than not, we're talking about a little d death. Some examples. Your kids are not turning out to be the people you expected. A friendship is deteriorating and you still don't know why. You thought you'd be married by now. and the disappointment is wearing you down. You're carrying the shame of being let go from a job. You've launched your kids from your nest only to turn to caregiving for aging parents. You know, it's interesting. I don't like naming the dying parts of my life. Definitely do not. But unfortunately, I didn't have the luxury not to do that after the stroke. So obviously, there were many little deaths. Oh my goodness. Death of dreams. So many dreams. Death of expectations. Just endless, endless deaths of stability, security. I almost had to relearn how to ever see outside of those deaths again, to have any hope at all. I truly had to dream new dreams and begin anew looking at how life could ever make sense again and how life could be again. Now let's name some dying parts of your life. Maybe write them down or say them out loud, or just present them to God in your own mind. Now, take the risk of asking God to give you one resurrection possibility out of the tomb of this situation. For instance, I always thought I would have a bunch of kids. Ever since I was a little girl, I was the oldest sister to my little sisters, and I've been mothering and just, I mean, I don't know, like wanting to be maternal since I was little. I just knew my great-grandmother Nini had 6 kids, grew up extremely close to that Halsey side of my family, where there's 6 kids, went on to have a whole bunch of grandchildren, a whole bunch of great-grandchildren, which is the generation I was in. And, you know, I had like 30 cousins that would all hang out on holidays. And I just knew that was me. I'd be Nini. And now I have 2 children. And that was a little death to be. You know, I had the really big ones and the real big near-death one. And yet there is such loss in the fact that I'm not going to have a bunch of kids. And then I have 2 children who are 8 years apart. I mean, that could be just kind of a weird and sad part of my story. And yet, A, the miracle baby I got to have 7.5 years after the stroke, and the fact that I do have these 2 children in my house is just this crazy, crazy blessing. And they are all I could handle. I'm not kidding. I don't really know what I was ever thinking. Like, why would I have 6 kids? 2 is capacity for this woman. And that's okay. The Lord has given me 2 for a specific reason. And I'm not crying that I don't have 6. I'm grateful for these 2. And you almost have to put it in a different place in your brain. My expectations were slashed in that department. And yet, the 2 boys at my kitchen table are the 2 perfect children for me. And I trust the Lord enough to know that's so, that he knew exactly what he was doing, giving me James and John Wolfe. Not that that always means it's easy or perfect, but it is truly a resurrection into something new. Okay, 2nd, make it personal in the present tense. John 11:25 in the Message translation says, you don't have to wait for the end. I am, right now, resurrection and life. The one who believes in me, even though he or she dies, will live. I see 2 really amazing things in these words from Jesus in the book of John. 1st, Jesus is affirming that he isn't the only one with access to resurrection. It can belong to us right here now if we choose to see it for ourselves. if we choose to see it for what it is. Second, I think Jesus is referencing the reality of heaven after this life. But I also think he is telling us that we can truly live in the midst of what feels like dying in our earthly lives. A couple weeks back, I talked about how I no longer wait for everything to be perfect to celebrate my life. And I may sound kind of like a broken record here, but you better believe it applies. Stubborn celebration, the joyful rebellion I'm always talking about, is one major way that I practice resurrection. So today, dear friend, how are you going to keep living among all the lost? Here are some super simple ideas to get you started. One, acknowledge the parts of your life that are fully alive today, even when so much feels buried in the loss. Don't neglect to cherish and express gratitude for the intact relationships, the stable income, the steady health, or safe home you have today. Guys, right now, as you may know, we have a book launching that I'm talking about, Treasures in the Dark, and a coffee shop, Men Coffee and Goods, opening almost at exactly the same time. Now, we could have never planned this. The coffee shop was originally going to open way back in October, and because of construction delays and just all kinds of issues, here we are, and it's all opening like in like a week and a half period. It's just so much. And I am making the conscious decision to, instead of being so overwhelmed and so stressed out, to see this, to view all these amazing things happening in life as abundance, as the sweetness of the Lord giving all these gifts to me. And I think that is what we are called to do, is to see overwhelm as abundance, that God's given us so much good stuff, blessings. Jay's late grandfather, Peeps, who I love deeply, was like a grandfather figure to me for sure. Ever since I met him when I was 18 years old, this sweet man would say, "I'm swimming in a sea of blessings." And that's it, that we are all swimming in a sea of blessings. And maybe we're swimming with a whole lot of fish in that sea of blessings at various times in life, but we're swimming, no doubt, in a sea of deep, rich blessings. Number two, take in stories that remind you that the full shape of resurrection can only be seen with time and distance. Now, as I've shared, my personal go-to in these realms is The Hiding Place by Corrie Ten Boom. So good. However, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you may remember my conversation with Jerry Sitzer, who wrote the book A Grace Disguised, and I would decidedly tell you that would be another for sure story that can remind you of the full shape of resurrection. He lost his mother, his wife, and his two-year-old child from a drunk driver hitting them, and it's just a super, super powerful conversation and book. And of course, you know I'm going to say all things Johnny Erickson Tada. Get you a copy of Johnny's book, Johnny, just J-O-N-I, and be amazed watching the resurrection of Johnny's life after extreme loss. Or, if you haven't, maybe read Hope Heals. Jane Catherine will find give you a little hope that there's resurrection in your story as well. It feels a little self-promotional, I must say, but it's actually completely and totally accurate that I truly nearly died and have a flourishing life. The end of Hope Heals ends with the birth of our baby, our miracle baby. Okay, number three, get outside in the beautiful spring weather if you're in this hemisphere. Breathe in that warm air. Focus on the blooming trees and the new growth around you. Choose to remember winter, the dying that had to happen for this new life to arise. That is a very, very powerful exercise, guys, to look and gaze upon the beauty in nature and know something died first. There was winter. It was dead. Is super powerful. Plus, I can remember years ago reading several studies that when we gaze upon beauty, it does something to our brain. So how much more powerful to gaze upon beauty and recognize it came through a season of deep loss to get where it is today. I can't recommend that enough. I love all of these practices and would highly suggest you incorporate them, that reading stories that give both perspective and showcase this kind of resurrection, engaging nature, and above all, acknowledging the parts of life that feel dead, that have felt dead in your story. But maybe they're not dead. Maybe they're buried in deep loss, but they're not dead. You can find them and cultivate the power of Jesus' resurrection in your own life. Okay, third point. Participate in it. Do you like all this alliteration? You know I'm loving it. Need a recap? First, we find the possibilities. Second, we make it personal in the present tense. And third, we participate in it. Resurrection is personal and present tense. But what's most special about it, you may ask? It's also universal, happening everywhere, all the time. I think following Jesus means practicing resurrection in your own life, while also participating in resurrection in God's big story. I love these words from N.T. Wright in Surprised by Hope. The point of the resurrection is that the present bodily life is not valueless just because God has a great future in store for it. What you do in the present by painting, preaching, singing, sewing, praying, teaching, building hospitals, digging wells, campaigning for justice, writing poems, caring for the needy, loving your neighbor as yourself, this all will last into God's future. These activities are not simply ways of making the present life a little less beastly, a little more bearable, until the day when we leave it behind altogether. They are a part of what we may call building for God's kingdom. What a beautiful thought. So let's find the places resurrection is happening in the world and be a part of what's unfolding. That is building the kingdom of God, people. For me, that's looking like participating in Hope Heals Camp and the Hope Heals Camp community year-round and the creation of Mend Coffee and Goods. Both of these places are little microcosms of God's kingdom where everyone is beloved and every person has a place to belong. So, let's talk about where you might participate in resurrection. What place of death grieves your heart most in this world? And what kind of life can you offer there? This might mean joining the disability ministry at your church and entering into deep mutual friendship with people with disabilities. They have so much to teach us. Or maybe I should say, we have so much to teach them. It's kind of that brilliant mutuality I talk about a lot, that it could go either way. Perhaps social justice matters are super interesting to you, and God is calling you to raise funds or awareness for a marginalized group of people today. Maybe you have professional credentials or experience that you could lend to a nonprofit like ours, doing redemptive work for unhoused people, hungry people, sick people, or under-resourced people across the board. Friend, I guarantee you, when you start participating in Resurrection, you'll begin experiencing new life in your very own soul. Even if your circumstances don't change, it is crazy. Purpose is a powerful thing. You may know this. When you've got a mission and a purpose, it changes how you feel about your circumstances and your story. Remember, friend, resurrection is always available to us, but that doesn't make it automatic, which is why we have to choose to practice it. Today is Maundy Thursday. In the liturgical calendar, we are still in the pre-resurrection days. Friend, you might be in a pre-resurrection season for yourself. It might not be time for new hope or fresh possibilities. It might not be Easter for you quite yet. I talk a lot in this book and on this podcast and in the world that there are seasons that before we can accept our circumstances, we must allow our circumstances to break our hearts and bewilder our minds. Only then can we move from allowing our circumstances to break us to then allowing those circumstances to remake us, to accepting those same circumstances. So I can't stress that enough. There is a time for the dark tomb part, the waiting part, the bated breath part, the part where things seem dead. Jesus was there himself. So if resurrection doesn't seem like a remote option yet, you're not outside of Christ's pattern for new life. The death part has to happen for new life to begin. Today, you can simply sit in the dark, still waiting. There's no timeline. Take your time in the darkness. Then, when you're ready, come on out. I think I've said on here before that for me, five years of not really knowing which way was up yet, not knowing how this is all going to go down, how I'm going to live this way, and then the cycle of surgeries and therapies and doctor's appointments and just coping with this new reality. And part of that was a long process of acceptance. If you can't anticipate resurrection for yourself, I'll do it for you. And any people around you who are participating in resurrection, ask them to practice resurrection with you until you can do it for yourself. You know, friends, I say all of this so, so tenderly. For so many of us, so many hurting hearts, it's not yet time to welcome in a new life. You want your old life back. You want the before. You want what you look back on that picture of and remember everything had not changed. And this isn't for you yet. I'm not talking to you. Sit and mourn and grieve, lament. That is so biblical. Like, let it rip. God can take it. It's sad. And it will be sad, I believe, forever. I talked about it on here before as well, that the sorrow stays. It's low grade, but it stays. And that's okay. But there comes a point where the pity party comes to an end. And time to figure out how to live in a new life, in a new world to you. I pray soon that you'll realize what it's taken me about 16 years to understand. And this is a quote from Treasures. The persistent practicing of resurrection is just different wording for healing. God bless you, friends. Thank you for joining us on the Good Heart Story podcast. To learn more about what we are doing, follow us on Instagram at Hope Heals. Check out all things Hope Heals at hopeheals.com. Don't forget to subscribe to this wherever you get podcasts, and please feel free to share this episode with somebody who needs to hear it. Good Heart Story Podcast is a production of Good Heart Story, LLC. It is produced by Leah Case and Mary Austin Hall. And I am your fearless and fabulous host, Catherine Wolf. Come back and join us every week where we believe that the good story and the hard story can be the very same story. We are with you and for you, friends.